Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity War, where we flick through old copies of Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies while we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Chris Adams.
I'm Nick McKinnon.
And what you been up to, Nick?
Just a little lazy bushwalking for the last 8 hours.
Lazy bushwalking. Is that why you're a bit late to get here?
Oh.
You had to walk all the way here.
Had to rub it in. Sorry, Chris. I'm late. Yeah, been up in Cradle Mountain, bushwalking through the snow. It's been beautiful.
Nice.
I don't feel guilty at all.
When you said sorry, Chris, were you saying sorry to me or to our guest? Because there's two of us. This might get a bit confusing.
It's definitely going to get confusing.
Because we have a guest. Chris is our guest. Chris Chobani. He's been on TV on like the 7:30 report. He's been on radio, on the Kyle and Jackie O show. Now he's stepping up in the world, coming onto the Eternity War podcast.
Hey, you're not meant to laugh there.
Sorry. Oh, no, I'm totally stoked to be here. It's great. I am. I feel very privileged. No, guys, I do.
Chris is here to have a chat with us. Chris is a gay man, gay Christian man, and he put up a petition on change.org to have conversion therapy banned in Australia, and it sort of took off a bit, and that's why he ended up on all of those on TV and radio, now to the podcast. So welcome, Chris. I hear you're stoked to be here.
Thank you. I am very happy to be here. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Nick, say hello to Chris.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Shut up, you.
It's confusing already.
This is going to be confusing.
I'll do it like Chris K and Chris C, because your Chris starts with C, whereas other Chris's starts with a K.
That'll be helpful. Thanks for that.
Or K-Ris. What if I call you K-Ris from now on?
Not from now on, but just this conversation, that's fine.
Just for now.
Yeah. I don't know. Call me whatever you want. Call me Dick. Hang on, that's your nickname, isn't it?
Oh, funny. Funny.
Uh-huh. I don't care what you call me. So I've known Chris for a fair while. I knew him way back in the early 2000s. It was a teenager.
Sure was.
Met him at we were both sort of within the same sort of Christian youth organization doing training and so on. You weren't openly gay back then, were you? Or were you?
I was. I was openly ex-gay. I'd realized when I was 17, actually, to be fair, I'd realized that from a much, much, much younger age, but I came out at 17, and by 18, I had already gone back into the closet and decided that I was going to be ex-gay, which means that I was going to put my homosexuality aside and live a life waiting for God to heal me of it. But I was always very open about it, I think. Even, you know, when I knew you, Chris, like when I was 19, I was pretty openly gay, just openly ex-gay.
Okay.
So did something happen in that between 17 and 18 where you were saying you were gay, and when you were 18, when you decided that you were going to be ex-gay, did something happen in that period that made you want to change?
I think, to be fair, I'd wanted to change since I was very young. From about the age of 10, I knew that I was gay. I always hated that, and I tried to deny it for a long, long time. I spent many, many hours praying to God, asking Him to take it away. I was extremely fearful because I had learnt, growing up in church, I'd learnt and heard all sorts of things about gay people. I heard that they were evil, that they were demon-possessed. I'd heard that they were abominations. I'd heard that they were pedophiles. I'd heard all sorts of things. And so when I realized at the age of, 10, 11, and 12, sort of had that growing suspicion that, oh, shit, I think I might be gay, all of those things that I'd learnt about homosexuals kind of scared me because I realized that, oh, that's me. You know, I'm part of that community that the church has said all these things about. So I must be demon possessed. I must be perverted, which was really hard. And so I hadn't wanted to be gay my whole life. You know, I hated it. I hated thinking that I could even possibly be part of that community. So I guess when I was 17, I had just left a Christian school. I'd started at a public school and I met another gay person who was my age and he was beautiful. He was very, very good looking and just really okay with being gay. And that was something that was totally new to me. I hadn't met anybody who was okay with being gay before because it had always been a negative thing. And so it would just gobsmacked me that there was this 17 or 18 he was year old guy that was totally okay with it, you know. And I mean, back then it wasn't okay in general society either, so it was really unusual to me. And so as I got to know him and I eventually came out to him and like other people, I was really tired, I think, and I was kind of desperate to say that I was gay, you know, after that many years of lying about it and trying to fit in with people that were so different to me. I think after I came out at 17, I went down to Tasmania to a Christian conference, and I think I just got scared that I'd come out 6 months prior and I'd kind of already been rejected from my church at that point, had nothing any longer to do with the youth group or any of the ministries that I was involved in because obviously I was gay. And being at a Christian conference and being surrounded by Christians, I just realized, oh my goodness, I really want to be part of this club again. You know, I don't want to lose this sense of community, you know. And so I recommitted my life to God, decided that I would be ex-gay and that I was going to wait and ask God to heal me.
Wow.
Sorry, that was a very long answer
to
a really simple question. Oh my God, sorry.
You didn't get to bask in the light of coming out for long.
No, certainly not. And I mean, it wasn't basking really. It was really hard because I came out, actually, funny, I came out to Jai Courtney. You guys know who Jai Courtney is? He's a Hollywood actor. Okay, don't worry about it.
He's a Hollywood actor.
Don't worry. Okay. Anyway, well, he is now. He wasn't back then, obviously. We were both only 17. But anyway, well, I came out at drama camp, which is very, you know.
That's a pretty safe place.
Yeah, well, I went to this drama camp and there was a moment there that I just knew that I had to verbalize that I was gay. And so I came out and it was amazing because I was in this place where everyone just kind of celebrated that. Yeah. They were like, dude, that's awesome. That's amazing. There was one Christian girl there, I remember, and she was very upset and very concerned for my soul. She took me on a bushwalk right afterwards and, you know, told me that, oh, God's made all of this for you, Chris. Remember, he loves you so much. You know, you don't have to be gay and all these things. And I sort of said to her, look, it's not something that I have chosen. Mm. Like, this has been the hardest thing of my whole life. But essentially, I was in like a really great bubble of people that kind of just accepted it. After the 2 or 3 days of camp, I went back to real life and had decided I was going to tell everybody else. And so I went and told my friends at church.
Different
obviously,
response?
That didn't go down very well. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Totally different response. I had people crying and people going and talking to the leadership of the church, telling them that they were very distressed and upset and worried about me. And the pastor of the church I was going to came and told me that I shouldn't have said anything because it's upset people. And I was essentially, I wasn't able to serve anymore, you know, just stuff like that.
You were pretty heavily involved in your church, weren't you? It was your life at the time.
This is the sad thing, I guess. Like when I think back to that part of my life, I had a really tough time as a teenager and just as a kid in general. I think I didn't have an amazing amount of friends. I was always teased for being effeminate and for being gay and for being a girl and like whatever else. And at that time I was at a school, a public school, for the first time in my life, and I was a very, very full-on Christian. You know, I had moved to that public school because I decided that I needed to get non-Christian friends so that I could share Jesus with them.
Wow.
You know? Yeah.
That's pretty intense.
That's the kind of kid I was. right? I only had Christian friends growing up. I went to a Christian school, went to church, went to youth group. And then I was like, how am I going to spread the love of Jesus by staying, you know, in this Christian bubble? And so I decided that I was going to change schools. And so I asked mum and dad if I could change. They were very upset, but we prayed about it. And I ended up moving to a public school. It was the biggest culture shock of my life. Yeah.
So you were a missionary very early on, in a sense.
I was known as Chris the Christian. Yeah. That was my nickname. Yeah. So that's how Christian I was, right? But anyway, I had a really, really hard time. I didn't make friends easily. And like, I remember being followed home from school by some of the older kids in cars, and they'd just yell out, "You're going to die, faggot." Shit like that, and just stuff like that happened a lot. And so church and youth group was a safe place. And I ended up going to the church almost every day after school. I would walk to school, and it was almost like church was real life. And my life at school was just this dream that I had to get through every day. It's okay, at 3 o'clock, I can walk to the church and I'll be around, you know, the office ladies, and I'll be around the pastor and the, you know, whatever, and these people that are part of my real life. You know what I mean?
Mm. So what about your family, Chris? Like, we heard, you know, drama camp. Yeah, they're all supportive. Church, lots of tears. Yep. How did things go down within the home?
Well, surprisingly, my parents were very loving when I came out. I mean, when I first came out to mum, she was very surprised, I guess, shocked that I'd said it, but I don't think it was really a shock to her. I'm sure that she knew for a long time beforehand, and actually she told me that she did know for a long time beforehand, and that she'd been praying about it for a long time as well, just pleading with God to not let it be so. Dad was also very loving. He sort of said, you know, I just want you to know that I still love you. You know, it's funny because so many gay people would wish for that kind of coming out with their family. I didn't really want to talk about it because it was something that I was so ashamed of and that I hated so much about myself. I didn't even know how I wanted to deal with it, let alone how to talk to my parents about it. So the only reason I came out to them was because I had confided in my pastor that I was gay, and he said that I had to tell my parents. And so I did, only because I felt that I had to in order to get help from that pastor. But yeah, I wasn't really ready to talk about it with them very much, so I just kind of came out and left it. In the months that followed, it became very obvious that my dad particularly was quite homophobic. He struggled with it very much because it certainly wasn't part of what he wanted for my life. And there were some very interesting fights around the dinner table about it. My parents, obviously being Christian, they had a very traditional view of sexuality. I guess they came from the perspective that it wasn't part of God's plan. But they, I mean, really, they were quite loving considering that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine the level of self-loathing from the age of like 10, you're saying, that's when you sort of realized. And you'd already had all of these messages from the church, and like, you know, I've got self-loathing, you know. Does Nick have? Nah, Nick just loves himself.
A little too much sometimes.
But, you know, to see yourself as possessed, or what were some of the other words you used?
Abomination.
Yeah.
And I think this is where my pain really sits, and what I guess I'm still battling in terms of finding healing from it is that those messages that I heard and that I obviously ascribed to myself as a child formed part of my identity and taught me from a really young age that I was not worthy and that I was broken and that I was sick and that there was something innately wrong and innately evil about me. And I believed that till my 20s. One of the reasons that I struggled with guilt and self-hatred so much is because I believed these things about myself. You know, even now, that still affects me. You know, my self-view, I'm still working on that, even all these years later. And even though now I've accepted my sexuality and I am not ashamed of it in any way, it's only in the last year or so that I would say that I have come quite a long way in dealing with those beliefs about myself that were forged when I was just a kid.
And those beliefs, they were forged a long time before you were even born. Like, you were meant to believe that.
Yes, absolutely, I was.
There's people that wanted you to believe that.
Well, it wasn't even just the church, though, you know. I mean, I remember very specifically thinking when I was a teenager, when I was about 15, I remember thinking even Centrelink didn't back then, you know, doesn't acknowledge gay people, you know. Our government doesn't acknowledge them as legitimate couples. And so it was like I grew up with all these messages from church telling me that it was wrong, that it was evil, that it wasn't okay, that it was perverse. And then on top of that, as I got older, I realized that, well, actually, society in general, even our government, isn't acknowledging them as of the same value as other people, you know. And I remember really specifically coming to that understanding when I was a teenager. So it's just a shit go, I think, for gay kids, really.
Because
I mean, thank God it seems to be changing a lot now, but it's hard. I can't say anything else about it, really.
No, because I was doing some research into, you know, where that all came from. How did we end up with that? And it was just interesting to see that, you know, like way, way, way back in human history, homosexuality, people were just like, eh, whatever. And then, you know, come the third, fourth century, Christianity and other religions sort of ended up going, oh, we don't want this and we, you know, we want to outlaw it.
Yeah.
You know, it's taken a long time from there to now to get to where we are to. But it was just the last century where psychologists, society, not just religions, but society and science was, you know, basically saying homosexual people are broken. They're, you know, we can fix them. We can, and they put them through all of this incredible torment to try and to try and change
them.
Yeah, so it's fairly recent that not being classified as an illness.
Yeah. When I think about that and about, you know, the fact, you know, it's not just religion, it's society and it's this and that, you know, I probably have a bit of a controversial view of this, but I really believe that homophobia stems from religion, full stop. And I believe that society in general, for as many years as I know about, has kind of looked down on them, is always because of religion. You know, society formed its views about sexuality based on Christianity or other religions. And so I think religion has a lot to answer for when it comes to homophobia. Because, I mean, even now, you know, there are people who are atheists who are homophobic. And from what I can gather, talking to them and just trying to understand where their idea comes from, well, it comes from growing up in a society that has taught them to be homophobic. And why has society taught them to be homophobic? Well, it's because society was always influenced by religion. That's what I think, anyway. And I have lots of people that disagree with me on that. But why would anyone be homophobic if it wasn't because of religion? Like, it just
And that's the sort of things we do talk about a lot on this podcast, isn't it, Nick? I guess how religion has shaped society or tribal thinking and
huge amount.
Did this experience for you, or this part of you, this deeply ingrained part of you, did that ever have you questioning whether you were a Christian or even if you wanted to be a Christian?
Yeah, this is the funny thing. Like, when I was 17 and I came out for the first time, I was intensely afraid of hell. The fear that I had was a real fear. As far as I was concerned, hell was a real place that I could very well end up in if I was to get hit by a bus. Just kind of believed that that was where I was destined. So I didn't kind of ever sort of think, oh, I don't want to be a Christian. Being a Christian for me was never something that was able to be changed. I mean, goodness knows, when I was 17, I definitely tried to forget about it and put it aside so that I could just sort out who I was and, you know, work out how I was going to deal with being gay and stuff. I guess when you have a relationship with God, you just can't forget that. Well, that's certainly been my experience. I know it's not everybody's. No, I've never been able to separate myself from Christianity. Or no, I've never been able to separate myself from God, put it that way.
Yeah.
Christianity, sure.
Okay.
I don't like necessarily to even identify with Christians sometimes, because I think what the church does is just so shocking. But there's a difference for me between the church and Jesus. And that's been something that I've held on to my entire life so far. I can't throw God away even though sometimes I'd like to throw the church away. I've never questioned whether God was real. I mean, sorry, I've questioned it and I've wrestled with it, but I have never kind of doubted it. You know, for a long time, I tried to throw out homosexuality so that I could live as a Christian. And then I tried to get rid of Christianity so that I could just live as a happy gay man. And, you know, I can't get rid of either of them. It's almost like both of them are so innate, even though I know that Christianity is not innate in me, but it feels like it is because I believe it.
Okay.
You know, I believe in Jesus and I love Jesus, and I wouldn't be able to just decide to stop that because it's inconvenient, you know. And so what I've had to do is reconcile my sexuality and faith so that I can live both of them, you know.
So you did put the homosexuality to one side and you started calling yourself ex-gay, you were saying. So yes. And
yes.
So what is calling yourself ex-gay? Because I thought ex-gay was someone who'd been through conversion therapy, but you haven't even been to conversion therapy yet in this story. So you start calling yourself ex-gay. What does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it was a rejection of homosexuality. I mean, I had already started counseling towards heterosexuality within the church, so with a Christian counselor, and had decided that I just couldn't be gay, you know. So calling myself ex-gay was basically me just professing, I suppose, that, okay, I have to acknowledge that I'm not straight. I've come out as gay. Everyone knows that I'm gay. There's no point in me just saying, oh, I'm straight again. So the way that I dealt with that was to say, well, okay, I'm gay, but I'm an ex-gay. I'm not living the gay lifestyle because I think it's sinful and I don't believe it's what God has planned for me. So I'm ex-gay now and I'm waiting for God to heal me.
Right.
What was the response of the Christians around you when you would refer to yourself as ex-gay?
Well, when I first did, I was embraced back into the church very quickly. They kind of celebrated that I was willing to put my sexuality aside in order to be a Christian. As the years went on, it became a very difficult conversation and a very difficult way to identify, I suppose, because, you know, a lot of Christians still had a lot of homophobia, whether you were ex-gay or not. A lot of people sort of viewed it as kind of suspicious, or it was hard, actually. I mean, I guess my identity in those years, for whatever it was, 7 or 8 years, was kind of difficult. Everyone kind of saw me as a different thing. You know, I had Christian friends who would sort of say things to me, like about girls and stuff, and I'd be like, dude, you know that I'm not actually attracted to girls. I'm, you know, and they'd be like, oh, but you're straight now, right? Like, you said that you're not gay anymore, you know. And so it was a really difficult thing because I had to always explain myself and always kind of talk about this part of me that I was so ashamed about and that I hated so much. Always had to talk about it, always had to explain it, always had to kind of justify that I was a Christian, even though I was gay, you know. So as soon as anyone found out that I wasn't straight or that I had been gay in the past, or it was like I had to have this conversation with anyone and everyone to just justify that, no, I love Jesus. I'm a Christian. I've put that aside. I'm going to heaven. I'm one of you, you know.
Because it was confusing to me because I knew you around that at that time, and I went, oh, well, Chris is gay, but he's pretending that he's not.
Well,
that's
Chris,
how I saw it.
It was confusing to me too. It was bloody confusing to me too.
So it sounds like Christians would respond to you saying I'm ex-gay. Their response would essentially be, oh, great, God's cured him of his gayness.
Yeah.
And then when it went to a deeper conversation and they realized, oh, no, he's not heterosexual, he's just, I don't know, denying himself, or I don't know what words they would use, but
yeah,
that's where the awkwardness would come in.
I guess so.
When they sort of went, holy crap, he might still be going to hell.
Oh, I don't think many of them thought I was still going to hell. I know that it affected some of the relationships and friendships that I made in the church, I guess, because of that sort of homophobia that's so rife in the church, you know. I mean, I started going to a well-known Pentecostal church at one point and had kind of expressed interest in joining their choir, and they flat out told me no. And I sort of said, oh, why not? Like, you know, and they just said, we don't have people like you in the choir. And then it was this conversation of me trying to explain, no, I'm ex-gay. I'm not gay, you know. And they were like, no, we know what you are, you know. Yeah. And so just being rejected from that. So But like the responses were different. I mean, when I joined full-time ministry, I was a singer in a Christian band. You know, the manager sat me down and said to me that, okay, you're telling me that you're ex-gay. If it turns out that you aren't who you say you are and that you're actually just a wolf in sheep's clothing, you're going to bring a curse on us. You'll bring a curse on all of our sound equipment. You'll, you know. So my experience as...
Don't put a curse on the sound equipment.
Yeah, I know, right? But, you know, like this was like constant. I'd be in tears sometimes because it was like it didn't matter how hard I tried. Like, what do I have to do to still be part of this club, right? Like, what do I have to do to be seen as a legitimate Christian? Like, I'm literally giving up something that's innate in me so that I can follow Jesus in the way that I believe that I need to. Mm. And I'm still not good enough.
So you decided to take another step.
I sure did.
Yeah.
Yes. I'd actually already decided to do that before I met you, Chris. When I was 17, I met with the leader of Living Waters. It was known as an ex-gay ministry back then. It's shut down now. Yeah. So I'd met with him when I was 17, and I decided that after high school, I would concentrate all my energy on trying to be healed, I guess. When I was 19, I moved to Canberra specifically in order to start doing this Living Waters course.
And I have no real idea, you know, when it comes to conversion therapy or reparative therapy, whatever people want to call it. I've read what used to happen in the past. There's some pretty horrific stories there of like lobotomies, electroshock therapy.
Shocking.
Taking testicles from one man and putting it into another, you know, all sorts of crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah, really bad stuff.
But then they moved it into all of this, you know, psychology. And Freud was a lot behind the beginnings of it. But then there was stuff where they would yell and scream at you. I mean, they're not sitting you down, tying you to a chair and putting toothpicks over your eyes and making you watch something to retrain your brain or something. Like what's going on?
No, not anymore. Well, I mean, look, there are lots of different forms. What I went through is very different to what some of my friends went through. What I went through is very mild compared to what some of my friends went through. So Living Waters, it ran like an Alcoholics Anonymous type of support group. So once a week we would meet. I had to purchase a big textbook, which was very thick, full of, well, in my mind now, pseudoscientific kind of thoughts around sexuality and around what they termed as broken sexuality. And we would have to do homework and read through a certain number of chapters in the week. And then we would attend a sermon, and then we'd split off into small groups where we would confess our sins of the week, be those thoughts or actions or whatever else. And then we would be like anointed with oil and blah, 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 blah. Doesn't sound that traumatic. I guess the trauma associated with it comes from the stuff that we were taught when we were there. So in terms of the ideas that they had around what was causing broken sexuality, what it did was it consolidated all of those shitty beliefs that I had as a kid. It just kind of, it just cemented them in layer upon layer. It just cemented them totally. And I guess because it was presented as an ex-gay ministry, a legitimate way of finding healing from homosexuality, I fully expected that I would at least be part way healed by the end of the course, right? Mm-hmm. And I really, right. I had been expecting that. But at the end of the course, I was like just as gay as I was before, possibly gayer. I can't tell. No, but you know.
But at least you felt shitter about yourself.
I did. I mean, I just remember feeling incredible disappointment and hopelessness. Like, okay, well, if that didn't work, what the hell am I going to do now? You know. So I went on to try all sorts of things like exorcisms and anything that I could possibly try. I tried. I have friends who went to similar groups and they did far worse things. Just really mentally abusive stuff.
I just wouldn't call it mentally abusive. I think it's spiritually abusive as well.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah. And I think the problem is, like, you've got all these people who are just bloody desperate, you know, absolutely desperate to fix something that the church told them was wrong. And, you know, you've got these people saying, oh, look, it can happen. Look, oh, look at me. I'm married now and I've got children and I'm an ex-gay and I, you know, whatever. And then you find out later, most of the time, or every time I've met anyone like that, I've always found out later that they're still gay. That was actually a breaking point for me later on, years later. So I remained celibate for the next 7 or 8 years, which was tough in itself. But I'd been reading a book by an ex-gay guy who was only like 28 or something. So he was older than me at the time, but still young. And I thought, oh, wow, this guy's been healed. You know, maybe I won't be 60 by the time God heals me. Maybe I can have a life. Maybe I won't have to be alone anymore. Maybe I can have a family and stuff. And so I emailed him and I started emailing him back and forth. We Skyped. But there were a few things that he said that I just didn't kind of make sense. And I, you know, in his book, he had said that God had healed him and that he was now straight and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I asked him straight out. I said to him, so when did you start being attracted to women? And he emailed back and he said, well, it's not quite as simple as that. It's a bit complicated. And I ended up finding out, well, actually, he's still just as gay as he ever was. He's just living in denial. And I think that was, for me, at the time, it just kind of shattered the lie that the church and that all of these organizations, I'd also heard from other people and about other ex-gay people who it ended up, they weren't healed at all of homosexuality. They were still gay as anything. And it just kind of shattered the myth for me. And I was intensely angry and extremely depressed. And I just realized, if God healed me of this, if God changed me from gay to straight, it would be one of the only times he's done it, because I don't think I've ever met someone that it's happened to, you know? All these other people have been lying to me, you know?
So through all those years where you felt Christians in the church were telling you that it wasn't okay to be gay and that you had to change, did you ever get a sense from God through that relationship with him that being gay was okay?
It's really hard to answer that, because I think we all are kind of indoctrinated as we grow up in the church. There were times, definitely, that I kind of felt like, you know, when people were praying for me, they'd say words over me and stuff, and I'd be like, that's funny. You know, inklings that maybe I was okay, but I didn't sit with those feelings for very long, ever, because I was very, very strong in my straight up and down traditional belief about everything in the Bible.
I struggle to understand why you're not furious at God at this point, because you did say that you're in massive depression. You know, you've gone through all of this. It's failed. It sounds like you still want to be straight and it ain't happening. And you still have all of this belief, all of this indoctrination about how evil you are because of it. Like how far down into the dark did you go at this point? Well, like, because I know like the suicide rate for homosexual people is ridiculously high.
I mean, I was angry. I mean, towards the end of my ex-gay years, so about when I was about 23, I think, I was just angry at the fact that I was gay, and I kind of had come to think that maybe God had actually made me that way, because I didn't understand. It just felt so innate and I was so confused about it. And I, you know, everything that I'd kind of been working on and all these people that I'd known in ex-gay therapy and stuff, like it all came crashing down and I realized that they're all still gay and that it was just felt like one big lie to me. And I was angry. I was angry at God. I was angry at them. I was angry at everything. But more than that, I was just deeply scared and depressed more than I have been at any other point in my life. I remember praying to God, I'm scared because I know that I can't keep up this level of morality for my whole life, what I thought was morality for my whole life. How am I going to remain celibate? I'm 24. I've been faithful. I have tried everything that I possibly could. I mean, it was even down to the point where I was starving myself of human interaction. If a guy came up to me after church and or after a performance and to say, hey, man, that was awesome, like you did so well, whatever, I would really quickly excuse myself from the conversation so that I could go and pack up the sound equipment, because I was just like, nope, I can't be around guys. I've got to protect myself from this. I've got to stay away. I thought maybe I could starve homosexuality out, you know, was just praying to God. And I was like, how can I keep this up? This isn't tenable. Like, I'm trying my very best to live a sinless life, to change and to whatever. And I prayed to him and I just said, I can feel that this is going to slip at some point. You need to either heal me or kill me. And I started praying before I'd get in the car in the morning. And when I was just going about the day, I'd just start praying to him that maybe I would be in an accident or something, just so that I could go to heaven and not deal with it anymore. The thought of being gay, like, it just wasn't an option. I was just praying for God to take me to heaven, to be honest.
Mm.
And I meant it. I meant it.
Yeah, that's intense. Yeah.
It was intense.
And I'm amazed at your dedication. Astounded that you would go through that many years.
It was definitely a very confusing and difficult time. I wish I could explain it to you better. I can't really.
You're doing a fantastic job of explaining it.
Yeah.
I'm baffled how you can go through all that and still feel positivity towards Christianity.
Yeah.
It fluctuates.
I'm in awe of you.
It fluctuates.
Well, Chris, just to let you know, Nick, so he hasn't been through this kind of torment, but, you know.
I have like, not.
But he was dedicated. He did pray to God every night for like, how many years, Nick?
Let's say 25.
25 years, and God didn't talk to him, and so he's thrown God away. But
no, I've just said I'm going to put you on the back burner, until you front up.
It's more dramatic if I say you've thrown God away.
All right. Yeah.
And yet you haven't thrown God away, and you've got more reason to, Chris, you know, like, what?
I can't. I mean, I tried in a way, you know, I really tried, because it was just so difficult for me to reconcile my sexuality and my faith. It seemed impossible. Even when I came to the decision, eventually, I've just got to accept this. I definitely tried to, I guess, get rid of God, but I couldn't. I can't. I love him and I believe in him, you know? And I can't give any other reason than that. And you know, I guess that now, years later, I've worked through a lot of the trauma and a lot of the stuff that I went through and all the stuff that I guess I was told. And I really separate God and the church in my life. I have a really fluctuating relationship with the church. Every time I come to a point where I'm like, you know what, you know, I'm not feeling bad about church anymore. Like, I feel like, you know, I'm picking up the pieces. I've started going to a church again, or I've started to kind of feel like I might be able to be involved in the church again. The church lets it down again. I mean, the last time it was this gay marriage thing, which just absolutely destroyed my relationship with the church that I was going to. I have no words for what it felt like to have the whole country debating the value of my relationship, arguing with people who have absolutely nothing to do with me, you know, or homosexuality at all, because they thought that their opinions were somehow important on this issue, you know? And it's like, what? Church became, again, a really unsafe place to be. I would be sitting in church and from the pulpit, someone would mention it, or like be talking about the traditional view of marriage or how God laid out what marriage was going to be at the beginning of time with Adam and Eve, or like just things like that. And it ended up that the pastor of the church that I was going to sent out a letter to the whole church, not explicitly saying you should vote this way, but reinforcing that the church's position is a traditional view of marriage. That was kind of it for me.
But they were believing the things that you believed not that many years before, and you'd believed for a long, long, long time. See, because I had grown up in that world, and, you know, so when I was younger, I thought homosexuality was a sin. I thought it was a choice that people made. But then I was like, oh, hang on, when did I choose my sexuality? Well, no, you just realize it. And so I eventually came to terms with it and had to wrestle then with all of the biblical stuff. Yep. I hear it's a fluctuating relationship, but so, you know, when that whole debate was happening, the gay marriage debate, I had to keep reminding myself that was me 10, 15 years ago. I've changed, so I have to allow that, you know, other people can move too.
Look, I hear you, and it's something that's actually helpful when I'm talking to people about it, or talking to people about my journey and my story or whatever, when they're Christian, is that I do actually, I get where they're coming from. I understand why they think what they think, because I totally 100% believed it too.
More than just about anyone else, in one sense as well.
You know what? I understand it, but I don't excuse it.
Yeah, that's fine.
I need to be able to still, I think those kind of beliefs and ideas about sexuality come from ignorance. And I don't want my God's church to be ignorant, you know? I guess that's why I kind of am keen to talk about my story and about where I've come and why I'm keen to talk to you guys, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's how it starts to challenge people.
Yeah, obviously you wanted to challenge something. You decided to start a petition.
Yes. I was getting frustrated because several times over the last few years, gay conversion therapy has been in the media. I had done a couple of TV things where they'd featured my story in it, which I wanted to do when I was asked. I was happy to do it because I thought, well, you know what, the more I can tell the story and the more that I can kind of show people how damaging this is, then hopefully the more likely it is that Christians will start to rethink their response to homosexuality. But I was frustrated because the media had kind of done a few things about gay conversion therapy. There was an article, there was a couple of TV things, and everybody, Christian people, gay people, straight people, so many people sort of got up in arms and, oh, isn't that awful? Oh my goodness, I can't believe this still happens. How is this legal? You know, whatever else. And then 48 hours later, had anything changed? No. I just thought, you know what, I don't want to share my story again just to share it and to be a piece of entertainment or sort of a feel-good story because everything turned out right in the end. I don't want that to be the purpose of that part of my life. If something's going to be in the media or if I'm going to tell my story, I want it to instigate some kind of change. After I read an article in the media about gay conversion therapy and how it's still just as prevalent now as it ever was, it's just more underground now.
Yeah.
I decided to start a petition to see how many people might actually respond to that. And I didn't really expect that many people.
You told me about 100 you expected maybe?
Yeah, yeah. I expected maybe about 100. And it was, you know, when I did it, I wanted it to be a way of just feeling like I was trying to do something. And then within just a few days, it had clocked up 8,000 and then 15,000 and then 21,000, 25,000. And at the moment, I haven't checked it.
I looked at it earlier. It was nearly up to 33.
There you go. So
almost up to 33,000.
Which is amazing because I...
well, it's not just your friends and your family, is it? You know, you don't have that many friends.
No.
So you've obviously affected, you know, you've reached a lot of people with that.
Yeah, I hope so.
When I was researching, there was another story just a couple of days ago in the Sydney Morning Herald here that was outlining that there are liberals in the government who are embarrassed that some of their members are advocating for the removal of discrimination protections for gay people so that they can promote and grow gay conversion therapy.
And that's in Victoria. Victoria is the only state that has a current ban on gay conversion therapy. Yet you sort of think, oh, that's great, fantastic. Yet still a year on from that change happening, you've still got people in the government that are advocating it and wanting to make it easier for parents to send their children.
Yeah.
I think the article you're talking about was about giving easier access to gay conversion therapy for parents.
I mean,
we're talking about kids. You know, you're going to stuff a kid up like by sending them to something that you know and that we all know is so damaging. I mean, it's not just me that says that gay conversion therapy is damaging. It's not just gay people. You know, it's the World Psychiatric Association, the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, the Psychological Association, the UK Council for Psychotherapy. I mean, the list goes on. Even in Australia, the Australian Medical Association. Even the United Nations Torture Committee looked into gay conversion therapy and recommended that something be done about it because it's so damaging. So it shocks me to the core that even though with all the evidence that we have and all of the stories that have come out about the long-term damage that is done, the suicides that have occurred because of gay conversion therapy, we've still got people in, you know, the Liberal Party in Victoria that are totally wanting children to go through this. What the hell?
To be fair, like, you know, there were a bunch of Liberal MPs that were also trying to it from going through.
I'm just saying. Like, it boggles my mind that this is even something being talked about. Like, it's an option.
But
what?
Why does it boggle your mind if, you know, 10 years ago you were in that place?
Because it's 2018. And because we're talking about Victoria, there is a current ban there. So they're talking about pushing it back. It's not like here where, okay, I'm pushing to have like a nationwide ban on it, but it wouldn't kind of shock me as much here if people were voicing opinions about wanting to make it easier to find and whatever else. But in Victoria, like, that would be going backwards for them. That it's shocking to me. It really is, yeah. Mm.
But I that's mean, your idea be. Of backwards. It's not their idea of backwards. That would be progress
well,
for them.
I guess the issue I have with that is that the evidence-based scientific, psychological, medical opinion of gay conversion therapy is that it is unethical, it doesn't work, and it is damaging. And so to me, I don't understand why, if all of these World Health Organizations and reputable organizations are saying, look, we've looked into this, this is the damage it causes. There is no question about whether it's valid or not. We know that it doesn't work. We know that it is absolutely damaging and dangerous. How the heck are we still even giving voice to people that have opposing opinions to that? I don't understand that. And okay, I understand that I'm probably biased because I've been through it, but it makes no sense to me. To me, it's not a controversial issue to ban it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
How but, is that controversial?
I was just going to say, I think you sort of like said it right back at the start as to regardless of all of the evidence, regardless of what medical people say, psychologists say, what all of these institutions say, there's another institution which has had a long say for a long time, which is people.
Right.
Yeah. Is it really that shocking?
Well, I guess
it was deeply ingrained in you.
When I say shocking, I don't mean surprising. When I say shocking, I don't mean surprising.
Yes, that's fair.
It disgusts me.
Yeah, fair enough.
We know that it's damaging. We know that it doesn't work. It's so funny, you know, the people that sort of say, oh, there are some studies out there that show that it might work. Well, you know what? I was part of one of those studies. When I was doing the Living Waters course, at the end, we were given a questionnaire that was designed to gauge how successful our conversion had been and whether or not we had experienced any negative mental things or whatever. And, you know, it asked questions like, how do you identify your sexuality now? Have you experienced depression over the last 6 months? Just things like that. And do you know what? Every single person that I spoke to in that course that I was at and what I wrote on my own feedback sheet was I identify as straight. I wrote that I now feel more attraction to women. I wrote that I had no negative feelings about it, that I didn't have any depression or anything. And you know why I wrote that stuff? It's because we were trained during that therapy to speak in faith, right? We were trained to speak in faith that we were straight now. We were told to identify, self-identify as straight men. No longer should we identify as homosexuals. We should now be identifying with the heterosexual part of ourselves, you know? And so, of course, we wrote down on that sheet of paper that we had experienced a change and that we were moving towards heterosexuality. So I don't put any value to any studies that went in a similar direction to that one, because it makes sense that broken people that are trying desperately to be straight, of course they're going to say that they are.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my opinion.
but like what Chris is saying, K-Riss is saying, it doesn't matter what any of those studies say, because if you're a Christian who believes in the Bible and the Bible says on numerous occasions that the punishment for homosexuality is death, is going to hell.
Yep.
Whatever punishments are dealt out here on earth just pales in comparison to eternity of torment.
True.
Like, I don't believe that shit, but, like, I can understand why someone who does believe in hell would just consider that whatever harm it does to you here on earth, it's better than you burning for eternity.
Yes.
Like, it's compassion that leads them to go down this path because they want you to have eternity with God.
Yeah. Totally. And, you know, I guess every person that I ever encountered that was like a leader in any ex-gay organization, you know, they have their hearts in the right place. You know, none of them are out to hurt anyone. None of them intend harm. None of them are homophobic, believe it or not, in the sense that they hate gay people.
But there's ignorance.
There is ignorance. But you know, they're all wanting to do the right thing, but they're just causing a great amount of harm while they do it. And they don't realize, you know.
But they're only ignorant if they're wrong about hell. If they're right about hell, then they're not ignorant.
Well.
Yeah, well.
That, I mean.
Well, they can still be ignorant, but yes, no, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, your statement is correct, but they're just wrong about hell as well, though, right?
Well, I think so.
Yeah, we all agree there.
Well, do we all agree? I mean, see, Chris, so you were talking much earlier about your absolute fear of, you know, going to hell, and that was a real fear, and that is a real fear for a lot of people.
Very deep,
you know,
fear.
That's a
yeah.
And I think any religion that's using fear to control people, I that's for me spiritual abuse, you know. But have you had to reconcile all of those verses, some of those that Nick was just talking about, you know, concepts like how, what sort of things have you had to reconcile to still be this God, Christian, Jesus person, well, and gay?
While I've retained my faith, it looks very different to what it was before. Before I went through all that, I was a very rigid and inflexible Christian that read things literally in the Bible that I now read figuratively. I didn't look at anything as historical or cultural in the Bible. It was all absolutely written for today, you know. Now, when I read the Bible, I read it differently. So when we're talking about the verses in Leviticus and all of those, I guess I don't believe in those laws as being for me or for today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those laws were given to a group of people. They lived many thousands of years ago, and that they were for that group of people. I'm not saying that there was anything wrong with those laws necessarily at the time, but they were cultural. I think.
So how do you know those ones were for back then, but other ones that you still...
Which other ones?
Oh,
because
like...
the ones that I pay attention to are love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbour as yourself. Personally, I believe that we are not under the law anymore. I believe that I've got the Holy Spirit, and I live by the Spirit. And so the Spirit tells me how to honor God in the way that I live. And I mean, I know a lot of people, they quote the Ten Commandments a lot. You know, I've never really understood, because there's nothing wrong with the Ten Commandments. They're good. It's good not to lie. It's good not to cheat. It's good not to steal. But those things, I don't believe that they're not rules for me anymore. I follow the Spirit, and the Spirit is the law of my life. And so, of course, I'm not going to steal, and I'm not going to kill, because I'm led by the Spirit and hopefully by love. And if I'm doing that, then I'm not going to do any of those things. People often talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. They sort of say, oh, well, the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, homosexuality. Well, I don't believe that either.
Mm. No, that was about rape, wasn't it?
You know what? There are different ideas about what it was about. Yeah. Some people say it was about inhospitality. Some people believe that it was about rape. Some people believe it was about this, that, and the other. You know, I think it's a stretch for us to just say, oh, well, clearly that's about homosexuality.
Yeah, but there's plenty of other verses as well.
Yeah, I guess the one that most people struggle with are the ones in the New Testament, like in Romans.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm no theologian.
But you would have wrestled with it for a long time. Right.
Oh, absolutely. I did wrestle with it, and I struggled very much with it.
Surely you've explored it a lot. So you're no theologian, but you'd have a fair idea around these verses.
I have an idea of what I believe about it.
Yeah.
And I read those through a cultural and historical lens. I think that when the Bible is talking about men lying with men, I don't believe that it is talking about two men that are in love in a monogamous relationship. I believe that it's talking about what men may have done back 2,000 years ago, right? So, like, you think about homosexuality back then, what did it look like? Well, it looked
a bit like some of the stuff that the Catholic Church has done.
Well, yes, that's true. I mean, you know, you know ancient Greece, right? Anyway, we won't go into that, but you know, like, I can't read into those verses, the homosexuality of the 21st century, you know, and part of that includes people like me who have monogamous romantic relationships. I can't pick that up and insert that into a verse that was written 2,000 years ago because that's not what the writer was talking about, in my mind.
If that's the case, why would God have wanted those verses as part of his holy scripture that is for all time?
Well, I don't subscribe to that view of the Bible. I do believe that the Bible holds a lot of truth about God, whether or not it is... what am I trying to say? I don't know that I believe that every single verse in there is like God breathed. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the Bible was written by men, you know? I don't know that God works that way.
I hold the same sort of view, but, you know, but people then accuse you of diminishing the Bible.
Like, yeah, but here's my problem with that. Like, you say that you're guided by the Holy Spirit. Do you think you're better guided by the Holy Spirit than the people that wrote those verses?
No, and I'm not saying that I am. I think that when I say that I'm guided by the Holy Spirit, that does not mean that the Holy Spirit gives me all the answers, and it doesn't mean that I'm like some sort of guru now. I just believe that it guides me in knowing what's right and wrong and being guided by love. That's what I believe. It doesn't mean that every time I read a Bible verse that I know exactly what it means because the Holy Spirit's telling me. I don't believe that either. You know, like,
so you never really got to the full story of turning the beautiful corner. And actually, you even said that when you accepted it, it was sort of like this begrudging acceptance. You know, it wasn't necessarily this beautiful moment. But so you've, you know, changed some of your perspectives on the Bible and on Christianity and so on. And do you still fear hell? Because you seem pretty relaxed right now. How did we get to this relaxed with who you are, comfortable with who you are position? And
I should probably preface this by saying that I don't believe in hell like I used to either.
Yep.
I don't believe that hell is a pit of fire that someone burns in for eternity. I really believe that when the Bible talks about hell, that it's talking about an absence of God and a broken relationship with God.
Yep.
Even, you know, when Jesus died on the cross, you know, the Bible says that the Father turned his face away. That, I believe, that was hell. That was, for Jesus, that was the breaking of those ties. That was the relationship broken. That was the punishment for sin that Jesus took on himself. So his relationship with the Father was broken in that instant. And so I believe that, and, you know, I'm not saying that I'm guided by the Spirit on this. I'm not saying, you know, but I...
This is the Word of God.
Just be careful because all of these subjects, like, this is the sort of stuff we talk about a lot.
Dude,
you know?
It's fine. That's totally fine. I don't mind. I'll talk about it. I love it.
So what were you going to say?
You know, in my mind and the way that I read the Bible and from the way that I've kind of wrestled with it, I don't believe in an eternal fire pit that's forever just charring people to a crisp in a living death, you know?
Yeah, I don't believe in hell either.
Hell is the absence of God. And let's not forget, God is love, right? So hell is the absence of a relationship with the one who loves us more than anything else.
So, Nick, you don't have a connection.
I have no.
I was really hoping to be the guy that has the gay person tell them they're going to hell, because that would be really fun.
Oh, you are. No.
Yes. Yes.
You're going to hell, Nick.
No, but...
you're going to burn.
Am I...
Yeah. No, go brimstone not. On me.
No, and, you know, am I still scared of hell? No. Number one, I don't believe that there's anything wrong with homosexuality anymore. But even if I got that wrong, do I believe that God wouldn't have grace for me in that? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Jesus died for me and he's interested in whether I have a relationship with him, you know, and I do. And I love him. And am I going to get everything right in this world? Do I have all the answers? Absolutely flippin' not. No, I don't. And I won't either. I will be a sinner till the day that I die. I don't believe that being gay is a sin, but even if it is, I have confidence in the fact that he actually loves me and that he sees my heart. So, no, I don't fear hell in the way that I used to.
Yeah. And you seem to know your heart now. to a bit. I don't know if that's correct, but you know, I saw you as this teenager, confused, not sure who you were, and now I've seen. I can see you.
Nice way of saying it, Chris.
Okay,
that's you were, every teenager.
You were a mess, and but I haven't seen you in a long time. I see you now, and I see you. I see you as a man. You know, and I see that you've grown into a man, and you seem to know your heart reasonably well now, because you seem at peace with all of this stuff somewhat.
I definitely feel more at peace with who I am. That's not to say that I don't have questions. I have no illusion of having all the answers, but I'm far more at peace.
Yeah. And have you allowed yourself relationships?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yep. I mean, are you that comfortable now? Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm single at the moment, so any nice guys listening? No, yes. Yes, I have had relationships. I've had some very significant relationships, but haven't found my husband yet, so fingers crossed for 2018.
It's an astounding story you've told us, because it's, in one sense, you only just get to start living now.
Yeah, 100%.
All of your life, there's been so many constraints on you being able to live freely.
Well, I can be myself now.
Yeah.
You know, and that in itself, I can't really explain what it's like to have to hide such a huge part of yourself for so long and to suppress it actively for so long. It's a tiring thing to do. I just feel so much freer in terms of being able to be who I am and not having to have so much guilt and anxiety surrounding that.
It sounds like part of your heart is also you don't want to see other people have to go through that guilt and anxiety. You don't want to see other people have to go through the trauma of conversion therapy. It's a pretty understandable thing to, you know, from your experience to them want to make a difference.
I should be clear, though. Conversion therapy, yes, I think that it needs to be banned because it's dangerous and because it does cause suicide. It causes loads of mental health problems, etc. But what really needs to change is the church. What really needs to change is the church's response to homosexuals and to homosexuality. They've had a response out of ignorance and a lot of the time out of just plain homophobia.
Yep.
And really, when I think about the trauma and pain associated with my sexuality in my life, yes, it was consolidated by ex-gay therapy, and yes, it was exacerbated by conversion therapy, but it was the church that planted it there. You know, the church was the root of the problem, like in terms of me feeling okay as a kid and me forging my identity and my beliefs about myself. The church did that. That's what has to really change. So yes, I've started this petition, and yes, I think it's important, and I hope that people get behind it and that Greg Hunt, the Federal Minister for Health, actually does something about it. But more importantly is churches and just people in churches starting to question, why do I think this? Why do I believe this way? Why would we be encouraging people to live in this way when I see like the damage that it's done to people? You know, yeah, I'm passionate about seeing gay conversion therapy banned, but I'm even more passionate about seeing the sick church. Okay, so the church always said that I was sick. I think the church is sick. And I would like to see a cure for the church, to be honest, in this arena.
Yeah. In one sense, this must be an exciting time to be alive for someone who identifies as homosexual, because we've just had homosexual marriage, things like that. So we're making progress. Do you feel like there's progress being made? And I guess the other question, do you feel like there's progress being made within the church? Do you find some support within Christianity and so on?
Well, for a start, yes, definitely things have changed. Even in the last 15 years, like I think back to when I was a teenager or even in my early 20s, I could walk down the street holding the hand of a boy and we'd get yelled at and beeped at by cars and all sorts of things. That doesn't happen to me now here so much. I mean, of course, these things still do happen, but, you know, I no longer fear for my safety. in the way that I used to. Obviously, in some areas I need to, but in the city, you know, I don't. But things are changing, and, like, obviously laws have changed, and people's attitudes in general and society's ideas about homosexuality have changed. I mean, we can see that from the same-sex marriage vote. I mean, that would never have happened 10 years ago. We would never have won it 10 years ago. And it was such a huge victory. So that, like, yeah, it's exciting because you think about all the people that fought so hard, you know, and I'm talking, not talking about myself, I'm talking about people much older than me, you know, in the 60s, 70s and 80s that were gay and that suffered so much worse than what I ever did for being gay. They never get to see it. They haven't gotten to see Australian-based marriage or society's views about homosexuality change, and I'm excited that I get to, and I grieve for those people that can't, and I'm so grateful for them because it's their hard work that got us here now. Do I think the church has changed? Yeah, I do, and I think that it is changing, and I think that people in the church slowly but surely are changing. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear to be the leadership that's changing. It's the people in the church, as seems to be the pattern with the church. You know, it's the congregations are 10 years ahead of the leadership, you know, almost, I think. But I will say that I do feel like during the same-sex marriage debate and all of that rubbish going on, I think it did bring out a lot of stuff in the church that I kind of had hoped had died off. There was a lot of homophobia and a lot of hatred that was coming out of the church, a lot of self-pity from the church and sort of them thinking that they were victims. It kind of shocked me in a way, like it surprised me in a way, because I thought that they were perhaps further along in the journey towards accepting homosexuality than they were. Yeah, but I mean, overall, I definitely feel like the church is changing.
Like, your story is incredible, Chris, and I listen to it and I go, I'm so glad our society has moved in the direction of just the obviousness that this is just a normal way of being a human being and there's nothing wrong with it. The concern I have is that when we have changes in society, the people who were the victims can end up becoming having too much fun enjoying their place as the new societal normal. And there is an element of the homosexual community that are taking this opportunity to really get stuck into people of religious views. And I'm not one of those people, so, you know, what do I care? But I do want people to extend grace, more grace than they were given. And so when people weren't extended grace and they were treated like shit, and all of a sudden they're now rightly being accepted as normal members of society, it can be very easy for those people to turn aggressive towards the church and to conservative Christians and conservative Muslims. And
absolutely.
I want the gay community to show Christians what Christians really should be like. They should be loving. They should be graceful. Yeah. They should, those sort of things.
I hear what you're saying, and I think it's really hard because the gay community has been very, very mistreated by the church. There is anger there, and yes, I hear you. You know, in a perfect world, yes, we would turn the other cheek and kind of be really friendly about it. And you know what? I think that in general, gay people are, and like they're very forgiving. But, you know, for example, during the same-sex marriage debate, I think what happened was that we, like gay people, really felt like we were fighting for something. We felt like we had to convince people that we had value. And it's shocking that we even felt that we had to do that in 2017, but that's what it was like. You know, we had to convince people that we were the same as them and that our relationships meant the same as them and were as important and as valuable. You know, when you have a group of people that have been mistreated for such a long time, really mistreated, and suddenly you put them in the spotlight and say to everybody, hey, it's open slather, your opinion counts, so why don't you tell them what you think? Of course, that minority group is going to stand up and fight and not necessarily always come across as forgiving. I don't think it's actually reasonable to have expected them to do that. Certainly, I definitely saw a lot of it. I saw a lot of gay people being very gracious. I mean, Magda Zubensky on Q&A was just so gracious to a lot of things that I would have been furious about and just torn shreds off people for, you know, but she remained calm and sort of said, oh, well, I wouldn't call you homophobic for this view and whatever else. And but I can't bring myself to expect that of a minority group that's been treated the way that homosexuals have. Yeah, does that make sense what I've said?
Yeah, but can you expect it from a Christian?
Well, I mean, look, I've had this conversation with a pastor who was asking me about what it will take to welcome gays into the church. And I said, well, you've got a tough job on your hands because the gay community is very angry, rightly so, very hurt and very angry. And it's they're not just angry at the past, they're angry at what you continue to do, you know? And so what it's going to take for you to be a welcoming church is for you to actually go out and apologize and say, admit what you've done and what you do that sucks and, you know, extend your hand to them. And you know what? It's probably going to get slapped away because they don't want anything to do with you. Biblical love, you extend your hand and it gets slapped away and you extend it again and it gets slapped away and it gets extended again. And I'm not saying that that's ideal, but in reality, there's a lot of hurt. They have so much mental health issues that haven't been addressed. There's suicide, like whatever, and the church has done nothing. There's anger and there's hurt.
No, they haven't done nothing.
Well, you know what I mean.
They've made it worse.
But this is what I'm saying. And so I think, yes, it's nice to say it'd be great if they could just be the better people and, like, you know, be the bigger man and, like, be gracious and stuff. It's really hard to do that, you know?
You're in both camps.
Yes, I am.
This is the interesting thing, you know.
Yep, so
one, you're extending the hand and apologizing for the past treatment of yourself.
Yep. You know, it's
being a gay Christian, you know, like the conflict that I would see is just astounding. But it's like, does that give you a special potential role to play in the healing process?
I don't look at myself as any kind of ambassador. I mean, I just really pray and I long for the day. I think about it. I imagine it, the day when the church as a whole will actually recognize the damage that they've caused and will acknowledge it and will actually have a part in fixing that. You know what? Like, I view it as a wall, you know? It's like the church built this brick wall, brick by brick. It was built between the gay community, the LGBTQI community, and Jesus. So Jesus is on the other side of the wall. LGBTQI people are over here on the other side. And the church built this wall because they said, no, you can't have a part of that. You're not invited to that table. And every time you look back through history, you know, Anita Bryant and her crazy crusade against gay people in California in the 60s, you know, another brick. The same-sex marriage ridiculousness and the shit that came out of the church during that, another brick. You can see how throughout history this wall has been built up brick by brick by brick by brick. And I think what it's going to take for there to be any change is for the church to actually say, oh, hey, yeah, there's a wall there and we built it and they're going to have to take it down.
I like what you've had to say. One thing that I do find interesting is, like, when you talk about how painful the same-sex marriage debate was for you and your community, like, was it a joyous thing as well because of the result? You know, is it – there was a lot of pain involved, but was it worth it?
That's a difficult question. Was it worth it? I'm going to say no, only because I think that I truly believe that the decision that we came to should have been done regardless of what the nation voted.
Sure, yeah.
And no, it wasn't worth it because, you know what, there are rifts between families, there are rifts between friends, right. There are rifts between people in their faith communities that will never, ever, ever be closed. And they happened because of that same-sex marriage bullshit last year.
So the rifts wouldn't have been there without that same-sex marriage debate?
No. So, for example, even my church. I was very happy in my church. They did not have a specific statement about what they believed about homosexuality or marriage or anything else. I mean, I'd spoken to the pastor about it. It was intentionally sort of not written down as like a statement because they wanted it to be open and they wanted people to feel welcome and whatever else. Then the same-sex marriage thing happened and suddenly the government said, hey, everyone start voicing your opinion. And so you had not only people on Facebook writing all their stuff, but you had things in the media. You had churches suddenly issuing statements to all of their congregation. Everybody had a go. It was open slather. And so, yeah, it's because of that the rift in my church happened, because that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And I felt safe in that community because I was like, well, you know, some people agree, some people don't, but it's okay. Like, surely we should be trying to live with each other's differences and stuff. But as soon as they were encouraged to go open slather and put that down and like send out an email to all of their congregation members and whatever else, I mean, the rift that occurred is very wide, and I don't see it being bridged, certainly not anytime soon. I know of people whose families, literally because of the vote, because they voted yes or no or whatever, there are people whose parents will not be going to a wedding of their children. There are families who don't talk to each other anymore. And these are friends of mine, you know. And yes, these people had these homophobic ideas before, but it was the vote and the open slather arrangement of it that caused the damage.
What do you mean by open slather?
Well, basically,
the people were encouraged to share their views.
Yeah, and I mean, even the ads were even saying, your opinion matters. Your opinion's important. Make sure you tell us what you think. It was insane. I mean, you've got this minority group of people who have a history of being mistreated. They have more mental health issues than others. There's suicide, like however many times the rate of someone who is heterosexual. And you go, oh, hey, it's open slather. Everybody give your opinion now on whether these people's relationships are as important as the rest of us. That is what happened in 2017. Like, you guys might not see it like that.
Chris will.
Well, I do partly. Like, it should never have happened the way that it did. But there's a part of me which is like going, well, it brought some of the bricks out into the open and, you know, added them to the wall, but now we know where they are. Now we can remove those bricks somehow. Now we can heal those rifts somehow. Like, I guess my question, my final question.
Yeah.
And you sort of, you said it before, and it was a beautiful vision that you had for the future. Yeah. And then you started talking about how angry you are still about all of this stuff. But then I'm going, you know what? I don't know. You know, I want to validate your anger.
You don't have to validate it, because it's my anger and it's my pain, and it's not something that you experience. So you don't need to, like...
Well, I guess I just want to say, like, what's done is done. Like, it shouldn't have happened that way, but it's done. And so now, how do we heal those rifts? How do we pull down those walls? And you had some ideas.
I envision it happening. I don't know if it'll happen while I'm still alive. I hope it does. I really do.
I think you should be an ambassador.
Yeah, right. I'm too angry. I get too cranky.
But you're part of that church, you know. So
yeah, I am.
I don't know. I keep trying to think, you know, what can I do?
You know what, Chris? Change is more than likely going to occur through people like you and, you know, people who are just everyday Christians that are in congregations and in the community and whatever else, you know, just talking about it and giving people another perspective. It's like my parents. I mean, my parents are amazing. Like, they're Christians. They go to a Salvation Army church. So traditional, right? Like, they've got a gay son and they go and talk to people in their church about me all the time. They've never hidden it. They've been very open about it, and they tell them that I'm a Christian in their Bible studies. My mum's told me, you know, there's been times in the Bible studies where she's sort of, something's come up and she's challenged and sort of said, well, hold on, what about this? And like, sort of, you know, it's people like that that instigate change, and people telling their stories and being real with others. It's no good if I, for example, run away from the church and decide never to talk about this shit again. Part of me would very, very, very much like to never talk about it again. It's not fun. It often feels like an uphill battle, rehashing it and trying to justify my position and whatever else, but I have to do that because that's how change happens. You know, me sharing my story, you sharing yours, you telling other people about your friend Chris that had this tough time, and that's what makes change.
You know, I want to thank you for, you know, having to rehash it all and go,
bring
it all up again.
It was nice.
You've been real. You've been very real. You know, I really feel that, and I really appreciate that. I think appreciate that.
No, well,
hell yeah.
I appreciate you guys and
also,
talking with me.
On behalf of two people who have spent the majority of their life in the church as Christians, I would want to apologize for whatever role we've had in, because I grew up with those beliefs that homosexuality was a sin and that they were destined for hell. Like, I don't think I would have ever said that directly to a gay person, but there's nothing in me that wouldn't have said that if it had have come up. So, whatever role I've played in this to the broader gay community, I would want to strongly apologize for my role in that because, I've been part of that community that has treated gay people horrendously.
Oh, I appreciate it. That's really nice of you to say. Thank you. And it's nice. I'm sure you really don't need to apologize, but thank you. Appreciate it.
Can I second all that?
You do need to apologize.
Not your bit, Chris. Nick's bit.
Yeah.
No, but I was the same. I was the same. And I actually have apologized to the homosexual friends that I used to debate with. Well, the ones that I could get in contact with, so I haven't everyone. Yeah. But I went through a long journey of, you know, talking to homosexual friends that I had because I was, concerned for their soul.
Yep.
And I was part of the harm that was inflicted upon them. You know, when I hear your story, Chris, about your real intense fear of hell, your hatred of yourself stuff, I'm going, I don't want to contribute to any sort of pain that someone's going through like that, you know? So I second what Nick had to say.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate it. That's awesome. Sign my petition.
So if people want to sign it, where do they go? We'll put a link up.
Yeah, awesome. So it's at change.org/endgaycures. Just log on there. Sign your name down.
Are there any other places online where people can keep track of you and your public persona?
Well, I mean, if you're interested, if anyone's interested.
His growing public persona.
No, TV, radio, podcasts. I'm definitely not interested in having a public persona about it, but I do actually run a blog for gay Christians. It's called gayandchristian.blog. I don't write all the blogs. The posts are contributed by gay Christians and also straight allies. So if you're interested, you can feel free to check that out. It's only new. I started it last year.
Yeah, we'll put up a link to both of those things.
Yeah, sure. If you guys ever want to write something, feel free. If you feel moved.
I won't feel moved because God doesn't talk to me, but if you can give me an idea of what the hell I could write, because I don't think I...
Sure.
What the hell would I know?
Okay, no worries.
What sort of an arrogant prick would go along and write something on a gay blog when he's not gay?
No, because...
And a straight ally.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm definitely an ally, by the way.
Yeah,
I know I ask some pain-in-the-ass questions, but I'm with you 100%.
Oh, no, I believe you. I'd no doubt about that. It's just a new thing. I just wanted to do something because a lot of the gay Christian stuff online is really American and, there's not much of a visible community here. And so I just thought, God, we just need to let people know that there are gay Christians in Australia, you know, so that, you know, there is that option. You can actually stay Christian and be gay. You don't have to walk away from your faith and you don't have to pretend to be straight. You can just be a gay Christian. Yeah.
See, he keeps saying that he doesn't want to be a gay ambassador, you know, a gay Christian ambassador, but here he is starting blogs and...
You know what? I'm being me, and if that makes a difference, then that's amazing.
Cool.
That'll do me.
You should start your own gay church. That would be sick.
No, thank you. No interest.
I might become a Christian again just to come.
You know, there are gay churches out there. If you really want to go to a gay church, I can tell you of some.
Really?
Absolutely.
They would have to be a hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah, they can be. Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming on, Chris.
Thank you very much for having me. I very much love that you guys want to talk about this kind of stuff. It's good. It's really good.
It's been an honor to hear your story, really. It has.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Keep up the good work.
Ambassador Chris.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Cheerio.
Goodbye. Bye. Thank you very much.
God here again. Are you shaking your head incredulously or nodding in approval? Well, if you got something out of this episode, you could really help those poor idiots by contributing to or supporting the Eternity Ward. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. You can share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah. I don't know, but don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comments section, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward. We'll be right back.